St. Augustine said, it is solved by walking. Having witnessed the interfaith war, all of these religious leaders in a time when there's so much division in our community and the politicians beating the drums of war, to see a Catholic priest, a Jewish rabbi, an Islamic imam, and an Aboriginal elder standing in the centre of the labyrinth together, in peace, in great joy, was deeply moving for everyone here. They were so happy. It's a healing path. Who knows what will be solved in this field one day? It is solved by walking.
What would bring together an Aboriginal elder, a Sikh religious leader, a Korean priest, a rabbi, a Catholic priest, an imam, and a pilgrim? It was a sunny day, cloudless and bright. The group of religious leaders came together, surrounded by suited philanthropists, stonemasons, hippies, and families with babies. They were in the middle of Centennial Parklands, standing around a circle, a huge outdoor sandstone labyrinth, and they were about to walk it together. And we'll walk it too today on Off Track. My name is Anne Jones and you're listening to RN. Saturday the 2nd of May is World Labyrinth Day. And to celebrate, we're re-listening to a story that first aired last year about the labyrinth which now has a home in the park in Sydney. In the paper barks nearby, a colony of bats went about their business, oblivious to the fact that $500,000 had been raised to make this stone platform, or that some of the city's most powerful people were trying to talk over them. And they continued to shriek as Her Excellency Professor the Honourable Dame Marie Bashir, in her final days as New South Wales Governor, guarded by army officers in dress uniform, officially opened the labyrinth in September 2014.
So it's with the greatest sense of privilege as well as pride and humility that I declare the labyrinth open. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Emily Simpson. I don't have a title. I'm the woman who built the labyrinth. Oh, not even that. I'm the woman who caused the labyrinth to be built. A labyrinth is a simple path for walking meditation, and it's different to a maze in that a maze has several different pathways, usually walls or hedges, and lots of dead ends. So a maze is designed to get you lost, and a labyrinth is designed for you to find yourself. So a labyrinth is flat. It's just a paving pattern on the ground. It's just a single path that winds into a central point, and then you walk back out the same path. So it's just a focus for meditation and contemplation. So if a maze is an intellectual exercise, a labyrinth is a spiritual one. The labyrinth is much older than Christianity or any of our religions. There are examples of the simpler version of the labyrinth, which are 5,000 years old, and on every single continent, every single culture had some version of the labyrinth. Predates any of our religions, and that's, to me, is the beauty of it, is its universal nature.
Thank you everyone, and welcome. The story of this labyrinth began with a passing comment in a transit lounge in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My friend Lindy was on her way to meet me in San Francisco when she bumped into a friend of hers who said, if you're going to San Francisco, make sure you walk the labyrinth at the Grace Cathedral. And so we did, and I fell in love with it, and this is the result. I'm thrilled to say that the woman whose suggestion started this whole chain of events back in that transit lounge in the States has flown in from Seattle to be here with us today. Yeah. Mary Ellen Johnson, welcome to Sydney.
I feel like my heart is so big and so open, it is almost ready to burst. My name is Mary Ellen Johnson, and I'm from Seattle, Washington. In October of 2008, I met Lindley Edwards in the airport transit lounge, And she mentioned she was going to San Francisco, and I said, well, while you're there, you must go walk the labyrinth at Grace Cathedral. Lindley then walked the labyrinth, introduced Emily to it, and the rest then is the history and the story of the Centennial Park Labyrinth being here. The one thing I know to be true is that our words can be very powerful, and we never know the effect that our words can have. You know, I've been near tears the whole time because it's so awe-inspiring to me that a simple thing that I said from my heart eventually just gained momentum to create this.
I observed as you were walking that you were, in fact, clutching at your heart.
I was, because I felt like it was going to burst. I had to hold it in.
Why do you walk the labyrinth?
Because the labyrinth helps me make sense of my life. It's very easy to see one's life as a series of mistakes and dead ends and wrong turns and bad decisions. Really, our life is just one seamless path. And there are twists and turns to it. And there's times we think we're as far away from where we should be as possible. But then we turn around and we're right close to the center. And all we have to do is yield and show up and take the next step. That's a powerful metaphor for life. It helps me make my life make sense. When things are difficult, I come to the labyrinth because I know that around the next curve, around the next turn, is something new, and that my life is divinely guided, and I surrender to that truth.
First time I walked a labyrinth was in 2009 at the Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, and I had had a lot of grief and tangled grief that was yet to be resolved, and something happened. I just walked this labyrinth and I started feeling better, and so I walked it again and again, and I came back the next day and walked it for several hours and I felt the grief lifting off me, and I felt held by the structure of its winding path and received by its mystery. So it was this, I can't really explain it, and I wouldn't have been able to articulate that at the time. It's just in reflection, on reflection, that's where what I felt. Well, I fell in love with the labyrinth, and for some reason, for me, walking meditation just does it for me. It's just beautiful. It gets me into that peaceful place really easily. So I came back to Australia, went looking for one, couldn't find one anywhere in Sydney, and I walk around the park often, and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to have one in a public space, a truly non-denominational space for people to come to.
Every labyrinth has its own energy because it embodies the intention of the people who created it. So no two labyrinths are alike. I will tell you that this is one that, because of where it's placed in this beautiful, beautiful place, stunningly beautiful, that it has a restorative energy all its own. When I first came to see it, when I first arrived in town on Saturday morning and I walked here in the rain to find it, it looks like it's always been here because it belongs here. All the construction could be seen as just a process of uncovering what the earth wanted to have here.
Well, I stumbled across this field one day, just walking, and wandered in and thought, wow, this is a great space. And I'd never been here before. I never knew this field. So it was this lovely, hidden, tucked away thing that gives you a sense of pilgrimage because you have to find it. It's not on the circuit, you know. I'm cutting a very long story short, but we put together a proposal for the Board of Trustees, and then they said, yep, you can do it, as long as you raise the money. And I went, oh. I think I naively thought they'd just, you know, build it. But no. So then I had to work out how to raise $500,000. I thought, oh dear, okay, what am I going to do? So I just started, you know, and it became my labyrinth, just putting one foot in front of the other, just following the path. As the path unfolded before me, I was following it. And, you know, it was just individual donations, wasn't corporate. There were some very big donations from philanthropists, and one of them was here at the opening, and very early on, he'd given me $50,000. which I fell off my chair literally when that happened. I couldn't believe. And he said, I really put you in it, didn't I? I went, yes, because then I had to keep going. So, yeah, I just kept going.
On RN, you're with Off Track, and I'm Anne Jones. Emily Simpson is the driving force behind the labyrinth in Centennial Parklands in Sydney, a flat construction about 18 metres in diameter, made out of beautiful stone.
When I first spoke to the stonemason, I said, OK, if you want to build this labyrinth, you have to come to one of my walks and understand it, understand the sort of, you know, the implications of it, the spiritual dimension of it.
I mean, I'm probably not at the same spiritual level as Emily. You know, I'm more of a nuts and bolts and a stone sort of guy.
So he came and he walked it. This was on the canvas one a couple of years ago. And he walked it really slowly and he was looking down at the pattern and he came back and he came out and he finished and he's just sitting quietly. And I said, so how is that? And he said, oh, I wasn't afraid of it before I walked it.
You know, I mean, this is a once-in-a-career opportunity for us. You know, the setting out, the organisation, the geometry. You know, I mean, those stones, they go where they go. There's no fudging, there's no creeping. You know, there's very little tolerance given to this.
But of course, none of this would have been possible without the remarkable skill and craftsmanship of the stonemasons from Bondi Stone, Doug Richards and Connor Cullinane, whose mastery you see before you. Yes, they're up there. I'd especially like to thank Darren Finlayson for being a champion of this labyrinth.
My name's Darren Finlayson. I'm a qualified stonemason. I've been running a business known as Bondi Stone for the past 22 years. We only had 4 masons actually work on this project, and my leading hand, the bloke I've, you know, stood shoulder to shoulder for my whole career, Doug Richards, he thinks ahead. I mean, he doesn't place pavers on the ground, which is what most people do these days. You watch him tap a stone down. He'll bang a stone down 80 times. He'll hit every stone. You know, we're talking 1,800 plus stones on that labyrinth. He laid nearly every one of them. And that's, you just need someone at his skill level to do a project like that.
Because this is no simple project.
Oh, no.
So how would you describe the labyrinth?
Oh, the technical set out of it is like nothing we've ever seen before. You know, everything from, you know, you don't realise that the whole thing has a camber in it, you know, and it's a fairly big camber, and the twists and the changes to the stones and the tolerance of the shapings to make them fit in. You know, we've got some great people, starting with the architect, William Zukon, you know, just fabulous. The time and effort this man put into this project could never be rewarded. And he's a man that can wear a blue jacket and brown pants and pull it off. He's got so much class.
William John Zukon, director of Dodds and Zukon Architects. I received a phone call from one Emily Simpson, who asked if I was interested in doing a labyrinth with her. And I tried to sound as knowledgeable as I could at the time, but once I hung up the phone, it had me quickly scuttling onto the internet to find out what she was talking about.
He loved it. He loved it. When I first talked to him about it, this was just with a little... There are desktop labyrinths, which are just plastic. You know, they're only about a foot wide. And he looked at it first, and I could see him trying to solve it with his left brain, trying to work out what it was, the geometry of it. And then he started, and you just walk it sort of with your finger. You just follow the path with your, there's a little groove in the thing. And he started sort of going, oh, my God, oh, my God, this isn't what I expect. This is not, oh, my. And he was sort of fascinated because it was disorienting and he couldn't work out why it was disorienting.
I wasn't quite sure whether it was a maze, as a lot of people think it is, and I had no idea, or I'd forgotten from university, that it was a one-path design. I certainly know a little bit about them now. Being an A to B in a straight line type of person, this idea of a squiggly route to get from A to B kind of cuts across the grain. It takes you in unexpected places and directions, you soon stop anticipating where you think you're going to go, because you get close to the centre and then you get right away from the centre, then you go left and then you go right. There's a calming in that, because you just let the labyrinth lead you along the way.
As it happens, there were so many miracles along this path. The world expert on the Chartres Cathedral, who has written a 5-volume tome on every aspect of the Chartres Cathedral, including the labyrinth, is one of the world experts on the labyrinth, lives in the Blue Mountains. He's called John James. He was an architect, and he is this wise old man of the labyrinth. Anyway, so he came down one day. They met. They spent the whole day, like, in raptures trying to understand the geometry in a way that only architects can get, you know, thrilled about.
He'd actually produced a hand drawing of it very early on in the piece, but the modern techniques today for stone cutting require a computer drafted drawing where every stone individually is described. Part of the geometry suits a computer beautifully, and so there are 11 circuits here, so there's kind of 22 bands of Wunderbine path stone, there's 22 bands or thereabouts of the dark stone. They're all part of concentric circles, and so those things are very easy to lay out in the computer. There are a few keystrokes and you've got a circle, then you put the next circle in, and so on and so forth. Although when we get to the lunations around here, we get to a bit that the computer doesn't like at all. So the lunations are all the decorative scallops around the outer perimeter, and they're a very attractive edge element, border element to the labyrinth. They're referred to as lunations, and between each one is what we refer to as the tooth. A correct labyrinth has a tooth on the main axis. So if we come over here and we look down the entry path, well, it's actually not the entry path, it's the path alongside it, and you can see right down the other end of the labyrinth there's a tooth right on that central axis. The Chartres labyrinth is that way. If you start where one must start at the entry path and you begin the lunations and you run from one side all the way around and you make them all the same size, you won't get the tooth lining up on that central axis. And it's probably one of the easiest giveaways to a labyrinth that hasn't been quite got right. But try and tell that to the computer is another story, because the computer wants to make them all the same. And so when we first set it out, we thought this is a doddle. We'd got all the banding it done and we whacked the lunations around the perimeter and thought we'd finished the job. Then we printed out the drawing. We looked out on axis there and that tooth was about a third of a lunation shifted off. So it was back to the drawing board. And we realised then that one half of the lunations had to be about 2.5 millimetres smaller than the lunations on the other half. And whilst eventually that was easy enough, and probably the computer through gritted teeth allowed us to do it, we were always worried about that actually being cut that way, because the difference, it was so small, to actually get them cut that way and when they were laid to actually end up with the tooth at the other end.
I mean, I would have struggled. I mean, me as a stonemason would have struggled without Doug Richards and Connor Cullen. And even from William Zukon's drawings, Doug evolved drawings. He'd go home of a night, he'd work on the next section, work it out, set it out, do another drawing and come back to work and lay it and then go home the next day, work on it again, because the camber changes everything.
So it sounds like he became consumed by this project almost.
Oh, he does. I mean, we're talking about a bloke who's done famous buildings around the city. You know, and he loves what he does.
Well, something that we were concerned about from very early on in the piece is that a whole lot of stone would be sourced from the quarry, the railway shut down, the blocks carried across, all the stone sliced up and then put on the wire saw machines to cut the 1,500 odd pieces. They'd all turn up on pallets. Everything would be hunky-dory. They'd start from the centre, they'd start working out, and partway through at some point we would start to get what we call creep in the pattern, which you can sometimes get in tile laying, where you get a little bit of creep or movement, and it might be a fraction of a millimetre per tile, but by the time you lay many tiles as you work out from centre, all of a sudden the stones weren't fitting together because the radii had changed and that very gentle curve shape has changed. And so we all had one-way tickets to Bolivia at the ready for when that happened. Fortunately, we never had to get them out of the drawer. It all went swimmingly.
The path and the border is made out of Wunderbine sandstone, which comes from Gosford, and it's a heritage grade sandstone, so it's the most dense. It's usually reserved for government buildings, which is why it was so expensive. To contrast with the Wunderbine sandstone, which is an off-white, we use this Victorian bluestone, which is nearly black. It's beautiful and a really strong contrast. So even as this ages and the sandstone gets a bit more grey, I think it'll still hold. Because we need contrast to find our way. It's a great truth in life that if this was all made out of sandstone, it would just be a big patio.
These lines that are set essentially flat into the ground act as barriers to people, because as I've been observing people's reactions as they walk along, they'll often approach and walk up to this first line and not cross.
I have noticed that, and it's a curiosity. It must be an innate recognition that the dark lines mean something. It has a strong little voice, doesn't it? It, in a funny sort of way, without any instructions, I guess one could work it out in terms of working out what to do.
St. Augustine said, "Solvitur ambulando," which means it is solved by walking. We've all had moments where we wanted the world to just stop so we could gather ourselves and begin again. The labyrinth is the place for that, a watering hole for the spirit, a place to come in times of anxiety.
How much has this project consumed your life?
Utterly, utterly. I mean, I'm just emerging now from it, and I've been completely consumed. I felt completely compelled. There was never any question that I had to do it. I couldn't not do it, which is a strange feeling. That I know there was a sort of madness that comes with it. Helps to have a bit of an obsessive compulsive disorder. I just wouldn't stop. I kept going. Sure, I drove them mad, the park authorities, because I just wouldn't stop. And so eventually it all sort of happened, but it wasn't just me. It certainly wasn't me. I have this sense that I was used as a vessel for this thing, that something, you know, I felt sort of, you know, called to do this, that it was much bigger than me, that this labyrinth needed to be here, and I may not even see the reason why.
Everything from the fundraising. I mean, I've never been to anything like that associated with work before in my life. And, you know, Emily, as a client and as a leader, you know, you had to follow her. You had to.
Have you been back to the labyrinth after the big opening?
Every week. It's just a wonderful thing that we've created. You know, and Emily, she rubs off on you. She does. She just happens to rub off you. So, I mean, I take a nice deep breath and off I go. I probably enjoy the craftsman and the stonemasonry side of it, you know, more than a few of the other things that I don't quite get, to be honest to you. But it's, you know, in 28 years we've done some fantastic projects, but nothing comes close to this. And I don't think anything ever will.
I have had to expand and discover capacities I didn't even know I had. In some ways, yes, it's a great achievement and I'm tremendously proud of it, but it's not so much what I did, it's who I had to become to do it, you know? I had to become the person that was capable of this, and I kind of look back and go, oh, wow, I get a bit frightened by some of the audacious things I did. But I was sort of in service to something greater than myself. So I, you know how you're braver on behalf of something, someone else or something else. And so,
Well, what now? What are you going to do with that person you've become?
I don't know. I'm trying to work that out right now. I just rest for a little bit. I don't know. Walk this beautiful labyrinth. I mean, I'll just keep putting one foot in front of the other, walking my labyrinth and see what unfolds.
The Centennial Parklands Labyrinth can be walked at any time. It's near the Willow Pond. Thank you to Emily Simpson, Darren Finlayson, William Zukon and Mary Allen Johnson for speaking with me. And also thank you to Karina Konchek, who composed the music you heard throughout this episode. The piece was made specifically for the Labyrinth opening. And if you liked it, you should keep an ear out for The Rhythm Divine with Jeff Wood on Sunday the 3rd of May at 1:30, and then on repeat on Sunday the 10th of May at 6 in the morning. He'll be talking World Labyrinth Day as well, and be speaking with Karina Konchek. Thanks for listening if you've got off track on the radio, but I also wanted to remind you to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. That means you'll be able to listen to the show on the go. There's a long back catalogue of stories to delve into if you need any further motivation to get out and about on a walk. I also wanted to tell you that there's an ABC Radio app which lets you subscribe to podcasts and save episodes you liked so you can listen again. Now, the best bit about this is that the app is for both iOS and Android, so whatever sort of smartphone or tablet you have, you should be able to find us and listen. You've been listening to Off Track on RN. My name's Anne Jones, and next week I'll meet you in the car park at the same time. That's when I'll take you somewhere else.
Really, our life is just one seamless path, and there are twists and turns to it. And there's times we think we're as far away from where we should be as possible, but then we turn around and we're right close to the center. And all we have to do is yield and show up and take the next step. And it's a powerful metaphor for life. It helps me make my life make sense.
This labyrinth will be a sanctuary for so many, an open invitation for generations to come. Who knows what may one day be solved in this field? So the next time you find yourself in a transit lounge somewhere and someone says they're going to Sydney, you can tell them, go walk the labyrinth in Centennial Park. Thank you.